Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Chris, what are we listening to?
It's 10 Fingers, 11 Toes by the Chicago indie band. Not a Goner Records, Memphis Goner Records band, but Goner Records adjacent band. That's going out to the Grizzlies, who got their 10th straight win yesterday. They'll be going for 11 tomorrow.
Do I get Robert Smith vibes from the singer?
Maybe. I get some, like,
It's obviously more fun than The Cure is, obviously.
I get late 70s New York,
yeah.
Ramones.
Yeah.
I was freaking out a little bit because the channel mix is, like,
yeah.
All left, and then it's pretty wild.
Yeah, when they wire it that way.
Yeah, I get some CBGB vibes.
Yeah.
I can buy that as well. Grizzlies pick up their 10th straight win. So, couple of things that I think let's start with. I guess let's start here because this is, I think, the most fascinating big picture question. At what point do we start to consider is the three-point shooting like a real marked improvement versus just like how long can we start to say you maybe can trust this?
Oh, I think, you know, I think with Desmond Bane, I think he's done enough to show that he can be effective again. And so you believe him because he's one of the best three-point shooters
right.
in the league.
On the planet.
Right. And so, you know, it's like the jaw thing is like, do I trust that? It's going to happen tomorrow? No. Right?
I did say, I feel very confident in saying this. If Ja averages 5 for 8 from three,
right.
the Memphis Grizzlies will win a title.
So to me, like the jaw thing, I assume Desmond Bane's a good three-point shooter. I assume Ja Morant, until proven otherwise, is going to be an inconsistent three-point shooter. And so, to me, it's more the rest of the team is the question. You know, Roddy knocked down a couple that game. I'm not necessarily depending on that in the playoffs. So I think everything's a mystery but Desmond Bane. I mean, when you think about playoff basketball, even Jaren, who's been, you know, a lot of people gotten mad over the years with Jaren shooting threes. He's now taken over 1,000, and he's like a 35% three-point shooter, and like he's 37% this season, and like I think he's a good three-point shooter for a big man. But Bane's the only one that to me is like an ironclad, like I trust this.
How important?
But I do think that, to your point, there's upside there to be good for stretches, and that stretches could happen like in playoff series.
Well, like I start to think about it. Okay, I am somewhat a believer in the eye test.
Right.
To a certain degree. And I understand that these guys go through ups and downs, but like the way Tyus Jones shoots the basketball,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with Tyus shooting threes.
I think Tyus after Desmond probably second most reliable guy. Yeah.
I'm getting closer to putting Santi in the category, and I'm wondering though, is it just because of how pretty his finish is?
Well, Santi has never played real playoff basketball.
Fair.
And so you look at Asante Aldama, never played real playoff basketball. David Roddy, never played playoff basketball. John Conchar played, got his first real taste last year, wasn't very good. You know, Zaire Williams, year two. And to me, it's those guys in the context of playoff basketball you worry about.
What is it about the third quarter that's made them so good? Because obviously, like when you go and you look at third quarter scoring, Ja is, I think, top five in the league in third quarter scoring. But is there anything markedly different in the third quarter that has made them so good?
Well, I mean, I think the way they construct their rotation, they play Ja most of the first and third quarters. And so getting, like, you know, 10, 11 minutes of Ja versus 5 or 6 minutes of Ja is probably, you know,
tends to make you better.
A meaningful thing. In terms of why it would be different third quarter versus first quarter, when you have more of an apples to apples comparison in terms of the rotation, to me, that's an interesting question. And I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it's halftime adjustment. Is it halftime refocusing? Like, you know, that I don't think they do anything differently in terms of how they play, but maybe they come out with more, I don't know, for whatever reason, they come out with a little bit heavier foot on the gas in the third quarters.
The only explanations that I've been able to have been psychological. I think sometimes first quarters, you know, there's maybe a pacing element.
Right.
And then I do think that they believe we can knock teams out in the third quarter. And yet again, like you said it on Twitter, like maybe he thought it was going to be a close game and the third quarter, it was like game was over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that third quarter. And it ended up, it was not as quite definitive in the last two or three minutes. You know, it closed the gap a little bit. But for like the first, we just had 30-something points with like 5 minutes to go in the quarter, basically. Yep. And so like I characterize it as a that was cute third quarter, where it's a 3-point game at halftime, and you know, this same Suns team beat you a couple weeks ago and they're hanging around, and that was not tonight.
Before even the third quarter, my thought was the Suns were in trouble when I felt like they had clearly outplayed the Grizzlies in the first half, and the Grizzlies went to the locker room with the lead. Like, to me, like that was like, ooh, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, and you could sort of see it coming with Ja, where, yeah, they're going under screens, and he's taking a bunch of threes, and he happens to be hitting them. But, like, if he needed to,
he could get to the rim.
He was going to get to the rim. And that's what happened in the third quarter. He was like, okay. I saved some wear and tear on my hip. Like, you know, I paced myself, and now I'm coming for your throat.
This has been a question that I've kind of struggled with, and so I'm curious to know your thoughts. Obviously, we need to acknowledge this has got to be the most we've seen the starting five in 2 years. You know, the same presumptive starting five.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was looking at a lot of stuff this morning.
I think we saw him 7 games last year total.
I think 10 in the regular season, 10, yeah. or 10 or 11. But to your point, not much. And I think they've probably already hit that now. I looked at a lot of stuff this morning. I didn't think to look at that. That's something I need to look at again to see where they're at with that. I mean, the stats been floating around about when Bain plays, they're like 18-5 or whatever.
I do know this. Since his return, if he hits A3, they're undefeated.
Right.
I hope everybody's sitting down.
And so, I mean, my main thing, I wrote a column off last night, and it's sort of a hard thing to do because you have the MLK day, and, you know, to me, dealing with that and dealing with the basketball, it's kind of hard to put them together, and I kind of tried, but to me, my takeaway from a basketball standpoint last night wasn't just, you know, 10th straight win, for second double-digit win streak in franchise history, one off the record. It was that the way they played last night, maybe more than not only any game in the streak, but any game all season, was sort of like if you were going to draw up on the blackboard, what is your ideal version of what this Grizzlies team should look like? It was last night. You take that box score, that's what you want the box score to look like if you're a Grizzlies. You want to see Ja Morant and Desmond Bane carrying the offense, both being great. You want to see Jaren as the clear third guy offensively and wreaking havoc on defense.
And I thought after kind of a slow start, he stuck with it. Like, that's another thing that I think's a big improvement.
Right. You want to see, you know, Dylan Brooks Dylan Brooks stepping back in the pecking order offensively and being efficient, like less but better Dylan, which he's like 4 from 8 from the floor, right? It wasn't, you know, 3 of 12 or whatever.
One turnover. Right. You know what I mean?
So the pecking order seemed right in terms of the offense. Who was driving the offense and who was driving the defense were the right people. Off the bench, like Brandon Clark, you know, you want him heavy points per minute, high efficiency, just come off and
pure sugar rush.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you want the rest of the role players to like be good role players. And yeah, as a team, you shoot like 40% from three. And so you're not going to check every box every night, but that was a game where they checked every box.
And that's kind of been the issue that I'm struggling with is how much of this is, listen, they've got the guy. This is the roster they wanted right now. Like, this is what they've got everybody healthy, and they've got everybody, to your point, playing pretty well.
Right.
How much of what the results that we're seeing is that versus, I mean, we haven't really seen like a great measuring stick game. I mean, it feels like they're just beating overmatched teams, and so I can't really take anything.
No, that's right. It's both. And maybe we'll get a better look tomorrow night with Cleveland. Of course, Donovan Mitchell had an injury issue last night, so I don't know what his status is going to be in the game. Even without him, that'll be a step up from these teams they've been playing
for sure
lately. But, you know, I was looking at it this morning in terms of, you know, Memphis and Memphis has won 10 in a row. They can't shake Denver because Denver, you know, won't stop winning either. And, like, the same night, I think it was the same night, maybe it was the night before, but the same weekend that John Morant had that highlight dunk, which, like, shook the world. I don't know, man. Jokic stepped back three to win a game.
The shot didn't count.
Just a casual, like, step back, you know, dagger to win a game at seven foot. And I looked at it, the reputation is like, well, Denver's bad defensively. They're up to 16th on the season. Over the last 15 games, they're second defensively in the league. And so it'll be another month, more than a month before those teams play each other again. And so I to your point, I would like to take this stretch we've seen from the Grizzlies and apply it to higher level competition, which they will do not in every game going forward, but it's about to start ticking up.
And then I also do struggle with the overall question of, well, what's it matter? Like, whether, I mean, in the end, you play the schedule that you play, and the playoffs are going to ramp up no matter what.
Right.
I do believe you'd rather be tested and seasoned going into the playoffs, but at the same time, it's like, it's going to be a 7-game series against the same team.
Yeah, I do wonder, and I said yesterday that, like, seeding doesn't matter as much as health and matchups and all that in the playoffs. I think all that's true. Denver is so good at home. You wonder, like, you know, if you're gonna see them in a conference finals, which you hope, you know, if both teams, like, follow their path, you'll meet up in the conference finals. Maybe in that conference finals, home court really does matter a little bit.
Well, and then that's the other question, though, that I have to your exact point. Both teams are 18-3 at home. Like,
right.
I think one of the underrated milestones of and, like, hallmarks of truly great team that we're kind of blowing past, and in fairness to us, so much happened so quickly.
Right.
It's not like this was a, you know, to quote Zach Kleiman, success isn't linear. It's like, it felt like, well, all this just came at once. But they're as good of a home team as you would expect out of great NBA teams.
No. They are a top three or four. I mean, record-wise, they're a top three or four team. But I think in substance, they're a top three or four team in the league right now. And, like, you know, enjoy it. It's not, you don't have to wake up surprised every day that, is this real? Are they really this good? No, yeah, they're this good. Which doesn't guarantee you an ultimate outcome because there are some other teams that are that good too, but not very many.
Well, I think that's kind of been the bigger struggle is, you know, I don't know why it is in the NBA that it's more difficult to contextualize. I think my working theory is, in the end, we created, whether or not it started with Jordan or whether or not it started in the golden age of the take era, like 2005 through 2010, everything became a ring culture in the NBA,
right,
and everything became about championships. It does, I don't know, like, I feel like it's just now, I don't want to say, like, just fast forward me to the playoffs, but it's like, that is, in the end, like, what's going to matter. That's gonna, what's going to define them.
Sure, but, like, let's say the Grizzlies, like, you know, lose in 7 games in the second round or whatever. Lost in six games in the second round.
It's another competitive, yes.
Whatever. Does that make last night less fun? Do you go back retroactively and take away the fun you had watching that game last night? This is why I'm not someone who's, like, obsessing over what the last page of the mystery novel is going to be every page I'm reading along the way, you know? I think these games are fun. As much as people want to diminish the regular season of NBA basketball, talk to any Grizzlies fan. Like, any Grizzlies fan, look in the mirror. Have you been enjoying this? Like,
well,
you know,
as someone who's
is your
still
joy
had
less meaningful because, you know, the outcome, you don't know what it's going to be at the end?
I think there's also maybe an element of you don't know how to process this type of good.
Right.
Because as someone who was a season ticket holder during Baroni Ball, when I still will go to the grave, he's like the third most effective Grizzlies coach. Because his job was to lose, but lose in an entertaining fashion.
That's right. Mission accomplished.
And he did so. Like, he was right. He was an effective coach. I don't know if he was a winning coach. In fact, I know he wasn't. But it almost feels like they're normalizing blowouts.
And, like, well, there is that.
And that's
one of the funny subplots. And this is the drama I've been begging lately because I'm someone who consumes a lot of national NBA media, both written and podcasts and the whole thing. And I'm not subtweeting any one person. I'm subtweeting like 7 different people. I keep constantly hearing the, you know, Jaren's been great defensively, but he's only averaging 26 minutes a game because of these silly fouls. He's got to quit the silly fouls. That is not why he's averaging 26 minutes a game. He played 26 minutes last night with 0 fouls. It's because, A, they don't play anybody a lot. They play a 10-man rotation. They stick to it. And then on top of that, they're having all these blowouts. Ja Morant leads the Grizzlies in minutes per game. He is 74th in the NBA in minutes per game, behind like Kelly Oubre and Gordon Hayward and all kinds of other Charlotte Hornets, right? And so miss me with the, like, I don't know if we can give Jaren this accolade or this accolade because he's only averaging so many minutes. What, you want them to play worse so they have to play more minutes?
I've always found that fascinating. It's like, where is the epicenter of the, like, talking about the NBA machine or the media machine? It's like someone says it becomes fact, because it was true once upon a time.
It was true.
Yes. But then people are acting like it's been true ever since. It's like, no, there
have been two games this season where his early quote-unquote foul trouble altered his rotation in a meaningful way.
And they were high profile.
They were both on national television.
Yeah.
And that is why.
I thought Shaq made an interesting point, and maybe, like, in the end, like, it'll take care of itself. It does seem like Josh is not high enough in the NBA or in the MVP conversation right now.
I don't know. That's a good question to see. I mean, at one point, I thought early in the season, like, he's got a real path to win this, because if the Grizzlies finish,
yes,
if the Grizzlies win the West, he's probably going to be the MVP.
He is the clear award winner on a quote unquote best team.
I don't think that's true anymore. I think it still could be true, but I don't have anywhere close to the faith of, like, well, if the Grizzlies finish first and he's the same season as last year, he'll probably be the MVP, because there are so many players doing crazy stuff every night. And you look at what Jokic does every night, what Tatum does every night, Durant, I think probably not because of some of the missed game stuff. But
I mean, Luka.
Yeah, Luka. So you look at Luka, Jokic, and Tatum. The numbers they're putting up are stupid, and in the context, two of the three of, like, at the top of their conference. And so, you know, if the Grizzlies finish a game ahead of Denver at the end, is Morant going to get it over Jokic when Jokic's numbers and his production are frankly better? As good as Jaws are, they're not at that level.
Could Ja get the, like, a Steve Nash MVP where people get bored?
Yeah, no, I think that would work against Jokic. I think the other thing would
be the Karl Malone. I think it's really officially the Karl Malone.
Well, the problem with Ja is that you have so many players putting up crazy numbers every night. He's one of them, but you have so many of them. And then he's just not, I know he had, like, the big highlight block or whatever. When you start factoring in defense and, like, sort of that total impact stuff, and you compare him to, like, a Tatum and so, you know, I don't know. I think he's got a path. And I think he probably right now is sort of starting to rise a little bit. But I don't think, like, if Tim Bontemps did his MVP straw poll today, like, Ja's not going to finish first in that. I think Jokic is.
Well, I think the other aspect of it is, how often does the MVP of the league not start an All-Star game? Because it does seem like, unless...
Yeah, that's a good point, too. He's not going to start the All-Star game.
I mean, unless someone gets hurt, you know what I mean? Like, but it seems like he's going to clearly be on the All-Star team.
Right.
But to me, like, that's actually... Of the things that bother me, and it's a very big asterisk of how much it does not impact my daily, but I do think if you're sitting here with a team that has the third best record in the league and they have been as dominant as they are, I find it hard to believe that team doesn't have more than one All-Star. That is kind of something that does
that's
bother me.
That's going to be an interesting conversation.
Bit.
I mean,
but there's not a clear
well,
candidate.
That's because of Jaren has played 27 games at this point out of 43. They're 30-13.
Yeah.
So out of 43 games, he's only played 27. And out of 43 games, I think Desmond Bane's only played 23.
Yeah.
Well, now, you look at the front court, like, Zion's missed plenty of games, and Paul George has missed games, and, like, you know, Anthony Davis has missed games, and I think that's going to be... Desmond Bane's not going to make the All-Star team. But in terms of Jaren Jackson Jr., when you get to, like, the last forward picked for the All-Star game, I think that's going to be an interesting conversation, and I think he should be in that conversation.
So we were trying to... Mark and I were discussing this. Would it be better or worse for Jaren to have Taylor Jenkins be the head coach? Because doesn't Taylor kind of give vibes of, I don't want to make it look like I'm playing favorites for my own guy? Isn't it coach selection, I thought?
Well, coaches selection.
Yeah.
Coaches writ large. It's not the one coach. He doesn't pick the reserves. The coaches vote on the reserves. In total. So I don't think that's going to matter.
Well, and like I said, in the end, like, Greg Popovich took his own player and made him an Olympian.
Right.
In Keldon Johnson. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, who cares?
I feel like the odds are going to be against Jaren because of the games missed and because a lot of times the fan vote will impact that stuff a little bit. It definitely impacts it if there are injury replacements. And Jaren's going to be behind in the vote to, like, to Anthony Davis and Paul George and some of those other guys.
In the end, like, I don't know. I've always felt like the All-Star game's too big of a resume line considering how many, like, When you really consider the makeup and the construction of it, the fact that it becomes a resume line, I'm not a big fan of.
Well, the fact that it's a midseason thing, you know, is sort of the interesting thing is there are 24 players will be on the All-Star team, 15 will be in the All-NBA team.
Yeah, that's the
Jaren might have a better chance to make All-NBA than All-Star.
That was kind of my thought. It's like when you because in the end they still make the distinction with center, correct?
I don't know NBA. About that. My point was going to be that the games missed thing, if he stays healthy, will mean less at the end of the season,
of the season.
Than it does now.
No, like it was fascinating. It's like you can make a case where if Jaren just stays healthy the rest of the way, his numbers are going to be overwhelming, that he's going to have a legitimate case not only to be an All-NBA, but it's like I could see an outside shot where he makes first team.
I mean, his defensive numbers are overwhelming, and his team impact numbers are overwhelming.
Yes.
His box score stat line is not, and that's going to be an interesting case. I think the people who vote on this stuff have gotten a lot smarter about it over the years. It's no longer like who averages 20 points. But he's averaging like 17 and 8 or 17 and 7. That is not like All-NBA stat line in the old sense of like the way we used to talk about it and think about it. But his defensive numbers are overwhelming, and his impact numbers in terms of the plus-minus and all that kind of stuff is overwhelming. And it's sort of like how many voters are looking at that, how many voters are like, who's averaging 20 points?
Well, it's kind of like the James Harden problem. Like when the Rockets turn to Harden and the usage rate goes just through the roof and he has these just overwhelming numbers, it's kind of the same thing that we're seeing with Luka. It's like,
right.
Well, how do you contextualize this between greatness and just the fact that it's – they're literally playing through one guy.
No, Luka's season is very similar to the MVP Harden and Westbrook seasons.
Yeah.
Now, I think he is certainly a better player than Westbrook was then. You could argue the Harden thing. But in the sense of being overwhelming usage on a team that's going to finish fourth in the conference
right.
and just putting up these crazy stat lines, I don't think Luka's going to win MVP unless Dallas really shoots up.
I think that's probably fair because in the end, like the other thing with the Westbrook year was there really wasn't a clear
That's right.
You know what I mean?
It was like, a little bit of a void.
It was kind of the seas parted for it. Like, it was the perfect opportunity.
He wasn't
for
looking
him.
At the level of competition yes. guys are looking at this season.
Yeah.
That's 100% true.
Anything else fascinate you from yesterday?
You know, no, not really. It was a great game. One of the best games of the year, fun-wise. Not one of the – as fun as the blowouts are, I kind of like some more nail-biters, like –
You sort of feel something.
Playoff intensity. Yeah. That tension with 5 minutes to go. Like, I do miss that a little bit. Those are more fun when you win. But they maybe are the most fun when you win that kind of game. And I think they could use some reps in those kind of games. We have not had many of those this season.
The blowouts are fun, like when we had them in the playoffs. Like the Timberwolves blowout after you kind of had a mini freak out of like, oh, is this going to be bad? Like the turnaround, like that was the reassuring. And then obviously just blowing out the Warriors.
I mean, some of these games I've had, last night's an illustration. The way the media seating is set up now, we have one seat down on the floor.
Yeah.
Whoever's writing the game story, which most of the time is Drew, sits in that seat. I'll be in that seat tomorrow night, but most of the time it's Drew. And so I'm sitting up top. And so when you're down low, like you're stuck there until the game's over, you should be. But up top, like, you know, there's 4 minutes to go and, like, the game's over. I'm packing up my stuff and walking down the media
always,
room,
yeah.
right? So I'm not, like, you know, it's not the kind of game where you're just you're on the edge of your seat till the final buzzer. And those are kind of fun, too. So I'd like to have some of those.
There's just something about that kind of, like, when you watch the thrilling end, that the feeling that you get. Like, it'd be nice to feel that once upon a time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.